From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Sam Baker. Today we'll learn about hearty West African dishes that gave birth to the Southern soul food tradition. But first, the family of the first Ebola patient to die in the United States has reportedly reached an agreement with the hospital that treated him. Thomas Eric Duncan's nephew and sister will speak this morning about a resolution reached with Texas Health Resources, the parent company of Texas Health Presbyterian Hospital in Dallas. Duncan, who was diagnosed with the virus late September, was treated for the virus at Presbyterian Hospital. The hospital came under fire for their care of Duncan, and the family has been openly critical of his treatment. Duncan died at the hospital October 8th. A new report says Texas faces real obstacles to improving pre-K programs despite pronounced efforts in Fort Worth and San Antonio. As part of KERA's American Graduate Project, Bill Zeebel talks to one of the study's lead authors about what's needed.
Robert Pianta co-wrote Pre-Kindergarten for the Modern Age at the request of Raise Your Hand Texas, an education nonprofit. The Dean of Education at the University of Virginia says while Texas offers some pre-K, it lacks both quantity and quality.
We've given kids access to pre-K, but the question is, you know, is there sufficient dosage to actually matter? It's not dosage to anything. It has to be dosage to something that really is sufficiently educationally intensive to move the needle for kids that are coming from struggling backgrounds.
Pianta's prescription for improved Texas pre-K, a higher dose of standards and dollars in 8 different nationally recognized categories where he says Texas doesn't measure up. He'd start with better trained teachers in front of our 4-year-olds.
I think about it as strategic opportunism. You know, you have to be able to read kids' reactions on the fly and know where to take them next. That's what we mean by quality teacher-child interactions. We can measure those, actually, in ways that are quite standardized.
John Breitfeller knows about qualified pre-K teachers. He runs the nonprofit Educational First Steps, which trains teachers in best practices for early childhood education. Standing in the back of a pre-K class, he says there's one way to make a real difference in children's lives.
You surround them with adults who know what they're doing. And so many times we invest in a snappier playground or a better piece of material, and we fail to recognize that the thing they need are the adults who know what they're doing.
Pianta's 19-page report also stresses the value of full-day pre-K. Texas only pays for half a day. Pianta says that comes with a price.
On most of the kind of tests that we give kids, the achievement gap between poor kids and non-poor kids is about 15 points. Most well-run pre-K programs of the sort that have been around and evaluated can help close that gap by a half by the time kids reach third grade.
Third grade matters. Research shows students not reading well by then are 4 times less likely to graduate high school by the time they're 19. Pianta says Texas also has problems with pre-K curriculum standards and student-teacher ratios. Both elements, he says, can stimulate creativity.
Oh, that breaks my heart.
At Little Rascals Pre-K in West Dallas, school seems to be fun.
Sometimes those opportunities happen at in a play situation. Sometimes they happen outside at recess. Sometimes they happen around, a set of blocks and Legos. And then sometimes they also happen in somewhat structured activities that are either book reading or literacy and language focused or math focused.
When it comes to Texas, Pianta says that's not all the state could do to improve pre-K. He says Texas should use data to measure and drive pre-K instruction, but it doesn't. Finally, he says the state could use a dose of political leadership. It cut pre-K funding more than 3 years ago, and he says it hasn't focused on quality or increased funding in recent years. Bill Zeebel, KERA News.
Now to learning in the kitchen. Some Dallas residents are studying the origins of soul food. There's a free cooking class that aims to bring back traditional recipes from the African diaspora. Lauren Silverman digs into health lessons from the soups of West Africa to grains of the American South.
Kale was just something to decorate party trays for Walmart worker Sharonda Taylor.
But I didn't know you could actually eat it. I just thought it was some form of decoration. It's pretty good.
Taylor grew up eating greens from a can, so salty, she says, they weren't edible. At a cooking class in her Southwest Dallas apartment complex, Taylor and a handful of families are learning to prepare greens, grains, peas, and beans, African American heritage foods.
On the bottom, we have our greens.
Natalia Marislioglu has teamed up with a nonprofit called Old Ways to teach a diet based on African heritage. The modified food pyramid, with greens at the base and sweet potato pie up top, was created by a group of culinary historians and nutritionists. Their goal is to encourage people to try new things their ancestors might have eaten and avoid the diseases their ancestors never had.
Today we're going to cook with brown rice, couscous, and quinoa. And the big takeaway today is we're going to learn about whole grains and refined grains. So
after a lesson on whole grains, she moves people into the community room's small kitchen. Denton Taylor, who's 24, refers to himself as a junk food kid, at least until last week when he learned to prepare greens in a whole new way.
We had made a salad, all greens, kale, spinach, collard greens, and mustard greens, turnip greens. We use dill in some of our things. We use avocado.
As onions, cauliflower, and bell pepper sizzle in olive oil, Marislioglu helps incorporate the whole grains, quinoa, brown rice, and couscous.
And while you weren't looking, I went ahead and added lots of curry powder.
Kevin Hardin seems at ease stirring in the quinoa, though he admits for his kids, it's usually hot dogs and takeout. Growing up, he says, African heritage foods meant something different.
Pork chops, barbecue, chicken, fried chicken.
Teacher Marislioglu jumps in to point out meat isn't on the African heritage food pyramid.
So no chicken, no pork chops. We're going to replace all that with whole grains and greens.
It is a plant-based diet, and what we know about plants is that plants provide us with hundreds of nutrients, vitamins, minerals, these things we call phytochemicals that we know help promote good health.
Lana Sandin is a dietitian and nutrition expert at UT Southwestern. She says there aren't a lot of studies on the African heritage diet. It was created in 2011, but the diet does emphasize a healthy variety of dishes that draw from Africa, the American South, Caribbean, and South America. More importantly, the recipes have a story.
We do know if you can tie an eating pattern into something that people kind of have buy-in or make it kind of personal, they might have a little bit more interest, a little bit more motivation in adopting a new style diet.
So far, the African heritage classes have helped some people across the country get into their kitchens more and lose weight. Old Ways reports of the first 120 people to take the class, 35% lost 3 pounds or more, and nearly 40% saw a decrease in blood pressure. Dallas participant Sharonda Taylor says learning about her connection to the food does make her more likely to cook it.
Knowing the history of Black history and how you even came about eating greens, it makes it so much easier.
And with that, she digs into a cauliflower stir fry. It has a hint of ginger, some garlic, and a sprinkle of nostalgia. Lauren Silverman, KERA News.
And you can get a taste of the African heritage diet. We have recipes for blackened okra and African peanut soup at breakthroughs.kera.org. Now, on our way out, a look ahead to the spring. A new festival in May called Saluna will offer experimental film screenings with live scores by the Dallas Symphony and a world premiere by the Dallas Black Dance Theater. The three-week festival begins May 4th in the Arts District and closes out with a free performance by the Symphony at Clyde Warren Park. Yesterday, the Symphony released a more complete schedule. You can find it at artandseek.org. You're hearing music by Ali Helnwein for L.A. photographer Alex Prager's series, The Big Valley. During Saluna, the DSO will perform Helnwein's work to accompany films made by Prager. In the forecast, we've got a high of 45 under sunny skies, mostly cloudy tonight with a low of 28, and then tomorrow sunny with a high of 42. 32 degrees now in Dallas, 31 in Fort Worth. You can like KERA News on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. From the KERA Newsroom, I'm Sam Baker.